Hot. 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 Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. This program gets behind the environmental, social, political, educational, spiritual, and health decisions that affect our lives and futures, yet are not always determined by us, but rather by politics, business, and other self-interest groups. Investigative in nature, we go where mainstream stops. As a leader in the healthcare and patient safety world, I now expose current and relevant harms and charms that either endanger or improve our health, our freedom, our privacy, and our sanity. Most of us simply don't have time to pay attention to decisions that are being made on our behalf, decisions made by people who may have less than altruistic motives. And often we don't speak up because we are not aware. Well, this program changes that by being the voice for informed choice. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy that we're together once again. And as usual, I have lots to share today, so let's get started, shall we? So, doctor, I have what? Wait, can you repeat that? How is that spelled? Wait, I can't understand what you're saying. Well, don't get upset. I just don't know what those words mean. Can you slow down, please? I still don't understand. I have more questions, please. Can you stop typing into your computer and look at me? So what's the treatment? Wait, did you say 3 times a day? Please hear me. I don't understand. Oh, well, that was crazy. Or maybe not. Does your doctor sound like that to you? And if so, it's not your fault that you don't understand. So let's talk about health literacy. One of the official definitions is this. The Department of Health and Human Services defines health literacy as the degree to which individuals have the capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information needed to make appropriate health decisions and get services needed to prevent or treat illness. Now, just take that definition, for example. I find that hard to understand. The degree to which individuals have the capacity to obtain. Well, that's a mouthful that, quite frankly, has too many words in it. Degree, capacity, obtain. So there we have it. Even the official definition is confusing. And what is scary about this is that the strongest predictor of a person's health is health literacy. According to the National Patient Safety Foundation, they say that nothing, not age, income, employment status, educational level, and racial or ethnic group, affects health status more than literacy skills. Now, some definitions are easier, like health literacy is the ability to understand and act on information. Well, that's better, but it still implies that it's the patient's problem. Ah, he doesn't have the ability to understand what I'm saying. She doesn't have the skills necessary to act on her health information. In fact, most articles and papers you find that discuss health literacy promote that same line of thinking. They say that those at risk include older adults, minority groups, people with less than a high school education, those who speak English as a second language, and lower income individuals. Those with poor health literacy are more likely to have a chronic disease and less likely to get the health care they need. Emergency room patients with inadequate literacy are twice as likely to be hospitalized as those with adequate literacy. Don't know what adequate means. And I say, maybe it's because physicians often do a poor job at assessing a patient's health literacy. Most everyone has the ability to understand something if it is explained slowly, with care, using words that the provider determines through thoughtful evaluation that the patient can comprehend, and then asking the patient to repeat, to teach back, so to speak, so that the provider can truly see and hear that the patient understands. And this takes time. Time that many providers simply do not have or are not willing to have with you. So in my mind, health literacy is a problem that originates at the source, the doctor's office, the hospital, the emergency room. For example, I read an elderly woman sent home from the hospital develops MRSA at the surgical site because she doesn't understand the warning signs listed in the discharge instructions. Another doesn't understand how to fill out the health history questionnaire at her doctor's office and checks no to every question because she doesn't understand what is being asked or how to check the columns. A young mother, instructed to give her child a dropper full of medication, doesn't know how big of a dropper to use and over-medicates her child. And I read of a man in his 70s preparing for his first colonoscopy who used a suppository as directed, but without removing it from the foil packet. Ouch. Well, a few years ago, my mom went to the doctor's office for an oxygen test, and the nurse demanded, "Did you bring your cannula?" Did we bring what? A cannula? A cannula of olives? A cannula of pasta sauce? Well, luckily, we knew that a cannula is the plastic tube that is inserted in your nose when using oxygen. But if we didn't know this, how stupid would we have felt? Then to add to that, when my mom replied, "No, I didn't bring it because I didn't know that I was supposed to, as I didn't know what the test entailed," the nurse barked in her face, "Well, these things aren't free, you know." Whoa, that type of behavior can shut down even the most health literate patient. When rudeness or arrogance enters the equation, you don't have to have low literacy to feel intimidated, shame, confusion, irritation, embarrassment, and fear. Oh, and what about the poor guy named Chuck? Good old Chuck had an earache and went to see his doctor. The doctor took a look and announced, "No problem, just a slight infection. We have something for that. My nurse Susie will be in with something for you. If it still hurts in 2 weeks, call my office and schedule a follow-up. Goodbye." And out the door he goes. 15 minutes later, Nurse Susie walks in and says to Chuck, "Here's a gown. Take off your pants and put the gown on with the opening in the back, and I'll return in a moment." Chuck's eyes open wide. What? Nurse Susie sighs and with a slight irritation repeats herself. "Here's the gown. Take off your pants and put the gown on with the opening in the back, and I'll return in a moment." Chuck stammers, but I don't understand. Why do I need to remove my pants?" Nurse Susie pulls out a piece of paper from her pocket and shows Chuck, "Look here, the doctor wrote, administer 4 drops in the rear." Chuck makes a face and says, "But I have an earache." "Oh no," says Nurse Susie. "Perhaps it's the doctor's sloppy handwriting. He must have used the letter R as an abbreviation for the word right and meant 4 drops in the right ear, not rear." Oh, now this is what I call a near miss or a rear miss. Chuck allowed his doctor to walk out without explaining what was wrong, what the treatment would be, how it was to be done. No questions or answers about the side effects. Nothing. Now, much as I think it is the provider who is largely responsible for the health literacy experience and outcome of each patient, I know that we as patients cannot and should not sit back and say, "Hey, doc, do your thing. It's all on you." Health literacy is the responsibility of everyone, not just the care providers. So what can you do? Well, first, don't be like Chuck. Ask questions. Bring a list of questions with you to your doctor's appointment. Bring a family member or a friend or an advocate with you to every appointment. Bring a piece of paper and a pencil or pen, tape recorder, or another taping device in order to review every conversation during the medical encounter. Ask your doctor or nurse to speak slowly. Use simple terms, repeat, and maybe draw a picture to explain a medical condition or if you need surgery. Don't pretend that you understand when you don't. Well, I think we all do that, don't we? Just say, "Stop. Please explain that to me." And if you feel you need more time, ask to schedule another visit or ask if there's a nurse or assistant who can answer your questions, but do not go home without your questions answered. Ask for a copy of all lab and test results and your doctor's notes so that you can review those in the privacy and the quietness of your own home at your own pace. You do have a right to these copies. And here's one. Medications and health literacy is a dangerous intersection. Millions of people are injured or die from medication errors. Side effects from medications can diminish the quality of life if not understood and managed. Know what it is that you take. Know the side effects. Double-check your pills when you pick them up from the pharmacy. Ask if there are other medication choices. Bottom line with medications, know what you're taking and why, for how long, what to look out for. I really cannot stress this one enough. And here's another quick one. We talked about this way back last year. There's a simple program called Ask Me 3 that provides you with 3 simple questions to ask your doctor. The first is, what is my main problem? The second, what do I need to do? And the third, why is it important for me to do this? That's easy. That's what Chuck should have done. Should have asked, what is my main problem? What do I need to do? Why is it important for me to do this? Among others. And finally, I suggest, listen to this radio show each week, as I know you do. It's an easy way to get you to think about the many issues that surround your health and healthcare. And get a copy of my book. And no, it's not a plug, but it's a resource. It's full of many hazards that the average patient runs into every day, and it's easy to read. Now, one of the advantages of working toward being as health literate as possible is that it puts you in a position to promote your own care. And it allows you what is called veto power that gives you the knowledge and comfort to say no to care or treatment that you may not need. Because remember, you are in charge of you. No one knows you or your body better than you do. And remember, there's no such thing as a stupid question. As they say, the only stupid question is the one you don't ask. And as I say, if you don't understand what someone says to you or cannot decipher a form or discharge instructions, that is not your fault. No one is fully health literate. It's simply impossible. So ask and keep asking until you are happily informed. Once again, I refer to the name of this radio program, Speak Up. It's so true and really quite easy to do. Don't be a Chuck. Ask questions. You have to speak up and stay alive. So, doctor, I have what? Wait, can you repeat that? How is that spelled? Wait, I can't understand what you're saying. Well, don't get upset. I just don't know what those words mean. Can you slow down, please? I still don't understand. I have more questions, please. Can you stop typing into your computer and look at me? So what's the treatment? Did you say 3 times a day? Please hear me. I don't understand.
After the show, be sure to visit the website speakupandstayalive.com for more life-saving information. Plus, that's where you can purchase the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate, Hospital Survival Guide. Bring the book to the hospital with you. It's the best way to stand out and in a positive way. And remember, we donate 2 handmade pillowcases to a local veteran's shelter for every book sold with your name on it as the donor. So for a mere $20, you benefit, and so does some well-deserving warrior. Give a meaningful and useful gift that really says, I care. Give the gift of healthcare safety. Purchase the book, the patient safety logs, and throw in some of those icebreaker cards. It's a one-size-fits-all present that everybody needs. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com or call me 440-725-5462.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I'd love you to be a part of my world. It's a world filled with amazing people, interesting and engaging ideas, all related to the preservation of this great planet of ours. We interview people from all over the world about topics that I know will interest you, and we educate people in fun, informative ways, and inspire them to take small steps so that together we can make a big impact. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and become a part of our world.
She is a dear friend of mine with lots to share with you. She even has a book, and you can reach her by phone at 520-230-3977. That's 520-230-3977. Or visit her website, MrsGreensWorld.com.
Today, more and more people who are in quote-unquote normal families, both parents have to work. So care that's needed pushes down to the children.
Hi, I'm Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we explore aging and caregiving in every generation. Listen to a brand new episode each week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, go to agewyz.com.
If you or someone you know is in the caregiver role, check out her website and purchase her book. Visit agewyz.com, and that's spelled AGEWYZ. Or give her a call, 800-590-2129. That's 800-590-2129.
This is Susan Marie from The Dougie Diva Show, the show for animal lovers. Please join my canine co-host, the Dougie Diva herself, Miss Olive, and I as we bring the experts in the pet and animal world right to you each week on Speak Up Talk Radio, or please visit us at our website at thedoggiediva.com. Have a great Diva Week, everyone.
That's right. If you want to learn more about how to keep your pets safe and happy, tune into my favorite pet show, The Dougie Diva Show, found at our very own speakuptalkradio.com or visit doggydiva.com.
Hot, 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 hot. Bring the heat.
And now, back to the show.
Right now, it's time for our weekly author spotlight, a favorite segment of the program where I tease you with a sneak peek into a recent author interview. If you love to read, you'll find plenty of fresh and fabulous authors at our very own radio network, speakuptalkradio.com. So take a listen, then head to the website to hear the entire 30-minute interview. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. So, let's take a listen. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I'd like to introduce you to author Karen Bell. Walking with Elephants was her first novel, although she is not new to writing. She was a theater critic and a celebrity interviewer for a weekly tabloid in Jacksonville, Florida, and earned a master's in mass communication from Oklahoma State University. For 15 years, Karen worked in corporate America as a technical editor, editor-writer, and experienced firsthand the politics and intrigue that goes with that territory, and the balancing act that comes with being a working mother. She says, "I salute all those mothers who are the glue that holds their families together while pursuing the 9-to-5 brass ring." Karen lives in Florida with her husband and their two furry kids. Their non-furry children are all grown up and live in Virginia, near D.C., Los Angeles, and Mainz, Germany. And she has three grandchildren. And we have lots to talk about today. So welcome to the network, Karen.
Thank you.
I'm happy to have you here today. I'm going to jump in a little bit of a different way today. Your first book is titled Walking with Elephants, and your second is Sunspots. And it is your second book, Sunspots, that is your most personal and cathartic as it heralds back to your early life. Before we get into both of them, I'm interested to know why Sunspots was not your first book.
That's interesting. I guess I was hesitant to delve into those feelings, and there are relatives that are still alive that were my first husband's family, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how I would go, in what direction I would go with that, so I just waited until I was ready to tackle it. But, you know, the first book was also a personal story because I discovered a lot of things when I went to work as an older adult, had my kids and then went to work. And women in the workplace are just, I have to say, they're awful. They are terrible to each other. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of shocking to see the politics and the nastiness that goes on a daily basis. So, and I have to tell, I think I wrote this in some interview that I posted online. What was a defining moment for me doing that was, you know, like I said, I had my kids first. I was very lucky that I could be a stay-at-home mom when they were young. But one day I walked into the ladies' room, and there's a young woman who's pumping her breast, and I'm thinking, why? Why are you here? Mm-hmm. There's a baby out there crying for mommy, mm-hmm. and you're pumping your breast instead of being with your baby. That's, like, not right. Mm-hmm. Just to be here in this world of hate. You know, learning some new software is not as important as nurturing, is the way I felt. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, like, put this kernel of an idea into my head about our priorities in this world. You know, it's like, if you stay home and take care of your kids and drop out of the workforce for a while, you can't even put that on your resume. Your resume just has a blank. Mm-hmm. What did you do for 5 years, you know? Well, I was raising my kids. Well, that has no value. You know, you weren't moving up the corporate ladder. So, you know, we have to figure out how to get our priorities straight in this world, because certain things are basic and important, and other things are extraneous. And we have to figure out how to maybe meld them together. So I just decided to, you know, use that as a vehicle to vent a little bit. You know, I wrote the book in the 90s. So, and I began to realize as I'm doing the Audible book now, because I'm rereading it, that not a whole lot has actually changed for women in the workforce mm-hmm. since the 90s. You know, they still are trying to get equal pay for equal work.
Right, right.
So, so that's what got me started on thinking about it and using kind of my personal experiences to, you know, lay the foundation of, you know, trying to do it all. Because at that time, when I went back to work, my kids were not that young anymore, but they still needed me. You know, they mm-hmm. still were in school. And that's a big juggling act.
It is.
But I was lucky. I worked very close to my home. So, and I had a kind of job that I could just slip out when needed. Mm-hmm. So my daughter would call me up and go like, Mom, I left my math book home, you know, so I could run home and get it. But I purposely did not pursue a job that maybe at a magazine in New York City. We lived in New Jersey, because I knew I would be like more than an hour away. And if I'm needed, can't get home right away. Right. Right. So I was lucky in that sense mm-hmm. that I live close to home and work. I mean, I work close to home. So, yeah. So that's why I wrote that one first, mm-hmm. because it was like very, I was still working
okay.
when I wrote that book.
Okay. And that's the book titled Walking with Elephants.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I have interesting remarks on that, because people are like, well, I could never figure out why she had that for the title, you know, and I didn't understand the graphic image on the cover, but, you know, the thing is that it's easily explained in the book that the woman is watching a show on TV, my main character, and the show is about elephants, and elephants are matriarchal. So my concept in the book is afterwards there's like an essay the main character writes that says, you know, why can't the first world become a matriarchal society? They've been patriarchal for so long, and it hasn't done us very well. We've had all these wars. What happens if we became a matriarchal society? What would our sports look like? Mm-hmm. You know, what would our office look like? Would there be, you know, women bringing their babies and nursing them in the office, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And the graphic on the cover is a woman who is nurturing the earth. So it was a very feminist kind of book with an interesting twist, because it also pushed being a homemaker and raising your children. Mm-hmm. So feminist on all levels. We are women and we are strong and we can do it all, but within reason. We need to be there for our kids. You know, we just need to be there. We need to raise our kids. They need to have that loving touch of a mother, but we also, as I came to find out, unhappily, is that you can't really start trying to have a career in your 30s. It's like when you're up against girls that have graduated from college or women that have started working right away, they keep moving up the ladder, and you're just looked at as somebody that's there to, you know, for pin money or something, that you're not really career oriented.
Wow.
And that was a tough pill to swallow because I'm very competitive, and I was probably smarter than a lot of the people that I wound up working for. Mm-hmm. So I don't know I still don't have the answer. I don't know how you have a successful career and be a successful, nurturing mother.
I don't know either, and it might just be an answer that each person has to come up with for themselves. And I'm sure that as women read your book, they recognize themselves in certain instances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and the other thing is, if you have a healthy child, you possibly can pursue a career. But what happens if you have a kid that has illnesses? You know, there's no way you're going to become partner in a law firm. I mean, somebody has to be taking the kid to the doctor or to the hospital or something like that. You just can't foresee certain problems that you can turn up if you're, you know, have the misfortune of having a child that doesn't mm-hmm. have good health.
No, it's definitely a juggling act. And I think it's even more important now that technology has kind of taken over everyone's brains. So I think it takes a little extra effort on a parent's part, especially a mother's part, to be there and make sure the child is present as well. I think it's a difficult time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there were simpler days, mm-hmm. but you know, my father started a business when I was in grade school, and my mother went to work with him and do the books and what have you. So I was a latchkey kid. So I grew up in a time period when all my friends had their mother home, you know, come home to milk and cookies and whatnot, and a happy mother giving you a hug. And I came home to an empty house with my brother. And it was, I felt nostalgic for having, not having my mother there. I wanted my mother to be there when I got home, you know. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't incentivized to, like, have a giant career, but, you know, and then I just didn't have the smarts. I thought I was going to try to be a doctor like my brother, but oh my God, organic chemistry killed me.
Put an end to that.
Yeah, I saved a lot more lives by not being a doctor.
There you go. That's a good way to look at it. But then you are an author, and so you're expressing yourself this way, and I think it was really important for that second novel called Sunspots. Tell us about that.
The reason the book is called Sunspots, because of the aurora borealis, is the character was conceived under the northern lights with her hippie parents, and they call her Aurora. And she, because of that magical moment of being conceived in that way, she has some special powers to see things that other people don't see and to have some time travel experiences. And so sunspots are what cause the aurora borealis, and that's why the book was called Sunspots.
Okay. I want to make sure folks know where to find more about you and where they can purchase your book, so share any information you want with us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my books are not sold in stores because when you use print-on-demand self-publishing on CreateSpace and Amazon, stores won't stock it. I did find one independent store in Gainesville, but so you can find my books on Amazon and on Smashwords and Barnes & Noble. I have a Twitter account, @KarenSueBell. And I have two Facebook pages for each book. So you can look up Walking with Elephants on Facebook or Sunspots on Facebook.
We've learned quite a bit from you, and so we'll send folks over to KarenSBell.com, and from there they can find you in all other places. Well, what a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for sharing you and your personal story and your books with us.
Thank you so much, Pat, and I hope that your charity helps a lot of people.
I hope you enjoyed today's featured author. And to listen to the entire interview, head over to speakuptalkradio.com, where you'll find not only today's author, but over 100 additional writers with plenty of quality books to share with you. That's speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I want to share a recent article from Harvard Medical School by author Jake Miller. It is titled, Location Matters. Patients at hospital-based primary practices more likely to get unnecessary tests and services. They say patients with common conditions such as back pain, headaches, and upper respiratory infections are more likely to receive tests and services of uncertain or little diagnostic or therapeutic benefit, so-called low-value care, when they seek treatment in primary care clinics located at hospitals, rather than at community-based primary care clinics. And this is according to a nationwide study led by researchers at Harvard Medical School and the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. The key driving factor of this disparity appears to be clinic location rather than clinic ownership. Their findings suggest that more immediate access to specialists and the proximity and convenience of imaging services in hospitals may drive physicians in such settings to overuse them. I think that makes sense, does it? Hey, go downstairs for an x-ray. Go upstairs for the MRI. You're right there. Might as well do it. Overtesting and unnecessary referrals are serious concerns because past research shows that up to one-third of medical care may be wasteful or unnecessary. And it can not only fuel higher overall treatment costs and spending, but for you as a patient, can also lead to additional invasive and potentially harmful procedures, and in the cases of CT scans and x-ray testing, expose you to unnecessary radiation. And we've talked about this many times before. So we as patients need to be aware of this location tendency to overuse certain tests and services of questionable therapeutic value. Common examples of low-value care include prescribing antibiotics for a patient with the common cold or other viral upper respiratory infection not affected by antibiotics, or sending a patient with uncomplicated back pain or headache for an MRI or a CT scan. In their analysis, the team compared patient records obtained from two national databases comprising more than 31,000 patient visits over a 17-year period, during which patients sought treatment in hospital-based primary care clinics or community-based clinics for upper respiratory infections, back pain, and headaches. They found that antibiotic prescription rates were similar in both community and hospital-based clinics, which is usually out of sight, just popping antibiotics right and left, when in fact the only time you would need an antibiotic is if you have a bacterial infection, not an allergy, not a virus. However, hospital-treated patients were referred more often for MRIs and CT scans than community-treated patients, more often for x-ray testing, and more often for evaluation by a specialist. Additionally, the patients most likely to receive unnecessary tests and services were those visiting hospital-based primary care clinics, but seeing someone other than their usual primary care physician. The finding highlights the importance of continuity of care and suggests that when you as a patient bounce from physician to physician, that you're more likely to be overtested and overtreated. And this takes me back to my opening conversation today about health literacy and your ability to feel free to speak up, to ask questions, and realize that you have the veto power to say yes, and more importantly, to say no. So keep the idea of location in mind during your next healthcare visit, and be sure to exercise your power. And the whole thought of overtesting makes me want to bring up one more recent healthcare shocker. A federal audit found that Mount Sinai Hospital in New York overbilled Medicare by nearly $42 million. But the hospital is pushing back against the findings. They say that these errors occurred primarily because the hospital did not have adequate controls to prevent the incorrect billing of Medicare claims. And then rather than own up to it, Mount Sinai wrote in a response letter that it's too late for the feds to claim the vast majority of those payments as they fall outside of the recovery deadline. They also say that some of the claims fell outside of the 4-year reopening window and did not need to be returned. Oh my, don't you just love that? Hiding behind legal technicalities and loopholes? And then there was the recent whistleblower lawsuit on Medicare Advantage plans. as they commit fraud when they knowingly submit or have a contractor submit on their behalf data to the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services that are inaccurate or ineligible for payment under the CMS rules. In many cases, Medicare Advantage fraud occurs by claiming payments for medical conditions that their members were not treated for and may not even have. And then there's more fun called upcoding, when they upcode a diagnosis to exaggerate the severity of the member's condition, claiming that a person is sicker than they really are, in order to submit to the Centers for Medicaid a diagnosis code at a higher rate. And I watched that happen on several occasions during my mom's almost 9-year health journey. For some reason, her primary care physician consistently tacked on diabetes as one of my mom's many diagnoses, when in fact she did not have diabetes. When he would give us the summary at the end of a visit, it always said that we talked about diabetes, when in fact we never mentioned the word diabetes. Once when I questioned him about this, he nearly lunged out of his seat at me, shouting that he did nothing wrong. Well, it was quite a bizarre reaction to my simple question. Methinks he protested too loudly. So again, I bring this up to fortify my plea to you as a consumer, as a patient, to become as informed as you can and ask questions. Because obviously there are people out there doing whatever they can get away with to make a buck, or millions, at your expense. Both of my radio shows, Speak Up and Stay Alive and Speak Up Talk Radio, focus on the central theme of you becoming the voice for informed choice. So I hope you take today's conversation to heart and feel free to speak up and ask questions and be an empowered patient. And I also hope that you can get a copy of my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. There are just so many tips and tricks and healthcare hazards that you may not be aware of. And a quick read of that book will put you in the position to feel free to speak up on your own behalf. So simply go to speakupandstayalive.com, head over to the shop page, and you will find the book. It's $20. Proceeds go to our pillowcase project, where we name you as the donor during our next pillowcase delivery. That's speakupandstayalive.com. Well, we are definitely out of time, so we've got to get going. I hope you come back next week. Same time, same place, but you know me, never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice. Well, it looks like we made it through another Cleveland winter, and that means some fun in the summer heat. And then we complain about it being too hot, don't we? And there is nothing worse than a steamy, sticky night when you can't sleep. That's when it's time for a little AC to cool things down. But when was the last time you had your air conditioning unit cleaned and checked? Well, my friends at BNK Heating and Cooling in North Royalton have a summer special to help you with that right now. It's only $59.95, and I say do it now before you flip the switch, only to find that your unit needs help. Call 216-210-2529 and ask for Bill. He helped us this winter with our furnace, and now he can help you too. That's 216-210-2529, or visit their website, bnkheating.com.